Topic number 2. Last week, on March 26, a new presidential council was created by a presidential executive order. It's called the President's Council on Integrity and Efficiency. The council will have 23 members. This will include officials from the Office of Management and Budget, the FBI, the Justice Department, the General Accounting Office of Congress, and representatives of certain cabinet secretaries. It will also include 16 inspectors general assigned to various government departments. The post of inspector general is itself a new one. It was created by Congress in 1978. It was the Treasury Inspector General who sent a useless report concerning Fort Knox to Senator William Proxmire last September 30, 1980. I have discussed that report for you in previous audio letters recently. It gave the superficial impression of an investigation to protect the public interest, but its only real function was to help keep the lid on the covered-up gold scandal. Likewise, we are told that the new Council on Integrity and Efficiency is being created to root out waste, fraud, and inefficiency in government. We're supposed to believe that it will be the government's way of keeping watch on itself. But, my friends, this is nothing more than sugarcoating for dictatorship. It is taken straight from the pages of the secret New Constitution for America, which I first made public in 1975. We are witnessing the creation of what the secret New Constitution calls the Watchkeeping Service, quote unquote. The so-called Watchkeeping Service would be headed by an official designated the Watchkeeper. The Watchkeeper, my friends, corresponds to the chairman of the new Council on Integrity and Efficiency, Edwin Harper. The secret new Constitution specifies, quote, "With the assistance of an appropriate staff, the Watchkeeper shall gather and organize information concerning the adequacy, competence, and integrity of governmental agencies and their personnel." Unquote. Further on, the new Constitution adds that to carry out the purposes of the Watchkeeping Service, quote, "personnel may be appointed, investigations made, witnesses examined, post audits made, and information required." Unquote. If you are one of those who demanded a copy of the Treasury Inspector General's report to Senator Proxmire, the words I just read from the secret new Constitution should sound very relevant. These things are exactly what the so-called inspector generals pretend to do, and in describing the new Council on Integrity and Efficiency, White House spokesman said that the Council will have the job of developing, quote, "a core of well-trained and highly skilled auditors and investigators," unquote. My friends, I first made public the secret new Constitution for America in my audio book Talking Tape No. 4 in July 1975. Shortly after that, I also released a pamphlet containing the entire text of the secret new Constitution. That is what I was reading from a few moments ago. As I detailed in my special audio book tape, it is an elaborate prescription for corporate socialist dictatorship here in America. When I first made the secret new Constitution public in 1975, the late Nelson Rockefeller, then as Vice President, was hoping to bring it into being all at once. At the same time, he expected to make himself president of the new disguised dictatorship for 9 years. And if Sarah Jane Moore had not missed when she shot at then-President Gerald Ford, Rockefeller might have succeeded. But by the grace of God, it did not turn out that way. So instead, Nelson's late brother, John D. Rockefeller III, spearheaded an alternate plan. In full-page ads all across America, a manifesto of change was published. It proclaimed a so-called bicentennial era, from 1976 to 1989. It was said that it took 13 years from the beginning of the American Revolution to the final emergence of America's new government 200 years ago. And so they said they would give themselves that long again, if need be, to once again revolutionize America's government. Most people have long since forgotten all about the Bicentennial and its obscure decorations of change to come, but step by step, gradually, the secret Constitution is already being implemented all around us. It was set in motion by the corporate socialist Rockefeller cartel, and ever since the November 1980 election, the crumbling Rockefeller machine has been trying to push it ahead. Even the loud cries of governmental deregulation are not what they appear to be. They are actually intended to pave the way for the so-called corporate authorities, spelled out in the secret new Constitution. These would enable big business to function free of government restraint and yet exercise life and death power over all small businessmen. It was all set in motion by the four Rockefeller brothers in their heyday, but 2 years ago the brothers were secretly removed by the Bolsheviks, and now the Bolsheviks themselves are turning part of these corporate socialist plans against the Rockefeller cartel. An example was the Supreme Court Bronte decision, which I revealed in AUDIO LETTER 61. Because of that decision, the new administration here in Washington has already started reappointing some of the inspectors general who were Carter holdovers. So it is a very mixed bag right now. The regrouped Rockefeller forces under John J. McCloy are slowly gaining power, but as I reported in AUDIO LETTERS 60 and 61 for November and January, the Bolsheviks intend to cut short the so-called Reagan administration. 2 days ago, outside the Washington Hilton Hotel here, it almost happened already. As it turned out, the Reagan administration was not halted that time, but there will be some slowdown in the plans of the Rockefeller cartel. Meanwhile, the Bolsheviks here will redouble their efforts to retake total control of the United States government. Meanwhile, the United States is being shut down to get ready for war. Money is being diverted from all kinds of programs with the excuse that they are wasteful and inflationary. But the funds are being dumped instead into the most wasteful and inflationary use of all, massive funding for unproductive weapons to fight a needless and hopeless war. In spite of all the political rhetoric about fighting inflation, it will grow steadily worse. One cosmetic measure after another will be announced, but they will not work, my friends, because they are not supposed to work. Finally, the time will be ripe for dramatic action. The President will announce to the nation that the situation is desperate. He will say that the time has come for tough action, and millions of Americans will agree. And with that, he will declare a national economic emergency. It will be like August 1971 all over again. President Nixon declared an economic emergency, supposedly to fight inflation. There were dramatic actions for cosmetic effect, including wage and price controls, but the most important action was hardly noticed. Nixon closed the gold window for international settlements. It was actually a secret declaration of war against the dollar, disguised to look like the opposite. It set off the stagflation era, with inflation far worse than what had gone before. Once again, we will be told that a national economic emergency is being declared in order to fight inflation, and just as before, there will be dramatic measures for psychological impact. But in the end, the result will again be just to make matters worse. As of now, the plans are being laid to declare the national economic emergency toward the end of this year, 1981. The most dramatic part of the plan has to do with the $100 bill. In that connection, Our psychological programming for things to come is already beginning by way of the so-called news. Right now, we are hearing more and more about the old theory that the money supply is the key to inflation. Those who subscribe to this money supply theory are called monetarists. Monetarist theory no longer holds water, as I explained 8 years ago in my book, The Conspiracy Against the Dollar. In this age of multinational corporations, other forces are far more important than the money supply. But the new administration is packed with monetarists. They are hinting that if only we could restrain the money supply, inflation would dampen down. In a seemingly unrelated vein, lately we are hearing a great deal about the tons of cash being used by organized crime. A recent story on the CBS television program 60 Minutes was an example of this. The story dealt with the oceans of $100 bills flowing through Miami banks these days. There are so many that they are not counted, they are weighed. The program showed $100 bills being bundled and stacked for storage and shipment to other banks by the Federal Reserve Branch Bank in Miami. The point of the program was that much of this money was drug money. Banks are taking in enormous amounts of cash, mostly in $100 bills, in areas where organized crime is heavy. Yet in other areas, cash is scarce. If you don't believe that, just go to your bank and try to withdraw $1,000 or $2,000 in cash if you have that much in an account. In many areas, you will be refused. The bank will tell you that you will have to wait until the cash will become available. In this and other ways, my friends, the $100 bill will gradually be turned into a straw man to be knocked down in the coming economic emergency. When the economic emergency is declared, the presidential executive order will declare the $100 bill illegal tender. Everyone holding $100 bills will be given a short time to redeem them. The redemption period currently planned will be 3 days. After that, the $100 bill will be repudiated by the United States. If you are still holding any after that, you will simply be out of luck. To redeem your $100 bills, you will be required to go to your own bank, one where you have an account. No bank will be required to redeem bills for non-depositors unless you will sign an affidavit that you have no accounts in any other bank. When you turn in your $100 bills at the bank, you will be required by presidential executive order to give your name, address, and Social Security number. If you turn in more than a certain small amount, perhaps $500, you will also be required to sign an affidavit stating where you got them. Up to that same small amount, the bank will redeem your $100 bills in cash of smaller denominations. Any amount beyond that will be redeemed only as a deposit to your account at any one time. All of this will come as a complete shock to the American people. The only advance notice of the $100 bill repudiation will go to foreign central banks. A mere 24 hours before the emergency declaration, they will be informed about it. The vast quantities of $100 bills abroad will be subject to the same brief redemption period as here in the United States. America's repudiation of the $100 bill will be portrayed as a tough attack on inflation and on crime as well. The disclosure provisions will be said to be designed to reveal holders of concealed wealth, including criminals. More importantly, the elimination of the $100 bill will supposedly help bring the money supply under control and with it inflation. $100 bills now constitute about one-third of the total dollar value of all United States currency in circulation here and abroad. Under the plan, many will be redeemed as bank deposits, that is, bookkeeping entries. Those can be watched and controlled far more easily than cash. We will even be told that the supposed anti-crime angle will have an anti-inflation bonus. criminals holding large hoards of $100 bills may decide never to turn them in and thereby reveal themselves, and that will result in an actual drop in the money supply. The monetarists will assure us that this will be like poking a pin into the swollen balloon of inflation. The presidential executive order declaring the emergency will also proclaim a bank holiday of several days. This will be for the purpose of preparing the banks for the redemption rush to follow. When the banks reopen, the actual redemption period to turn in your $100 bills will begin. The emergency proclamation will also close the nation's stock markets for a similar period. Two excuses will be given for this. One is that the administration will want Wall Street to absorb the news in an orderly manner without any chance of panic. The other excuse will be that large amounts of crime-related $100 bills are being laundered through the stock exchange. The cutoff of those cash transactions will come as a shock to Wall Street. As a psychological ploy, it will be a masterstroke. It will seem to say that America has finally gotten serious about its inflation. The dollar will temporarily become stronger abroad, and the price of gold will plummet. Speculators with inside information will sell gold short ahead of time. Then, after the price drops, they will buy up the gold again. The psychological shock of the $100 bill ploy will soon wear off, and then gold prices will head upward again on the crest of new crises. For all its dramatic impact, the repudiation of the $100 bill will have no lasting effect on inflation. It will be defended by the monetarists as justified by their money supply theories, but it will actually attack nothing but the symptoms of inflation. If inflation is really to be cured, it must be by going to its causes, and that cannot be done without tackling the scandal of America's missing gold reserves. Even so, the elimination of the $100 bill will have a lasting effect in another way. It will begin to condition Americans to the idea that there is nothing sacred about the currency we are accustomed to using. Only a little further down the road, the process will be completed by replacing our shriveling dollars with a new currency. But even that will be only a way station on the way to the final destination of a cashless society. The final dream of the money monopoly masters is to reduce everything to credit entries processed by computers. If they can achieve that, then they will achieve total control over the money supply, and they believe they will also achieve total control over you and me. At long last, we will all be their slaves. The declaration of economic emergency will also have another purpose. It will secretly activate the emergency powers of the President for wartime measures. America will start moving more quickly onto a war footing. The bureaucracy of wartime controls will start cranking up, all in the name of fighting inflation. And having been terrorized by the government into turning in our $100 bills as we did our gold in 1933, we Americans will start developing a wartime mentality. It will take place at a subconscious level. Most of us will be unable to define why we somehow feel uneasy. But without being told a word, Americans will feel the ghostly pre-war echoes of the 1930s. The $100 bill episode will also leave many of us feeling helpless to resist the seemingly almighty government. The message will be burned into our minds, "Obey or else." We will be on the road to war, and we will also be on the road to dictatorship here in America. Topic number 3. My friends, these are the things which are now being planned for us. It is real. It is happening. If you still don't believe it, just think again about those moments outside the Washington Hilton Hotel 2 days ago. Assassination politics and suicidal war preparations have got to stop. We have arrived at this point along an economic road. So to stop it, we too must fight back with economic weapons. The one economic weapon which is big enough to do the job is the Fort Knox gold scandal. That is what I explained in AUDIO LETTER 56 last summer when I first began giving you my answers to the question, what can I do? Lately, a few of my listeners seem to be losing sight of this, so I think I should say it again. If we want to do something about our headlong rush into disaster, the Fort Knox gold scandal is the way to do it. If we just get bored and walk away from it, my friends, it's all over. We will have forfeited America's last chance. Perhaps there are some among you who are growing weary of our preventive war of truth. That is why I was so reluctant ever to begin the process of giving you my answers to the question, what can I do? When I began doing this in AUDIO LETTER 56 last summer, I emphasized as strongly as I could that we will have to stick with it if we want to win. But in our speeded-up world today, scandals are like water poured over sand. They make a big splash for a moment, but they hardly sink in before they are gone. Many people get bored. They are forgetful. They lose interest quickly. And because all this is so true, our enemies always know they can get away with anything. All they have to do is wait a little while, and we will oblige them by forgetting about it, whatever it was. If there are some who feel this way, it would be best for them to turn back now and go no further. Better to flee the coming catastrophe now, before it happens, than to end up later as a pathetic refugee from a devastated America. To those who feel they must make that choice, I can only say, go and may God be with you. But large numbers of you are still saying in your letters, what is the next step? What is the next action we can take? To all of you I say, may we now redouble our preventive war of truth. It's time for us to draw our second wind, because the longer we persist without giving up, the more dismayed our enemies will become. In topic number 2, I discussed the creation of the President's new Council on Integrity and Efficiency. I also revealed its unadmitted source, the secret new Constitution for Dictatorship in America. But like other recent Presidents, the current occupant of the Oval Office is an actor, doing as he is programmed to do. In the past, other Presidents have later expressed deep regrets for taking actions which they did not understand at the time. Woodrow Wilson publicly regretted signing the bill creating the Federal Reserve System. Harry Truman regretted his creation of the CIA, as he said in public shortly after the assassination of President Kennedy in Dallas. And at the end of his presidency, Dwight Eisenhower gave a warning against the military-industrial complex which had dominated his public life. So there could be a ray of hope in connection with the new Council on Integrity and Efficiency. Just after signing the executive order to create it, the entity President Reagan said, quote, "We are going to follow every lead, root out every incompetent, and prosecute every crook we find who is cheating the people of this nation," unquote. My friends, if the President really meant those words, then we should take him up on it. If he did not mean them, then we should call his bluff, because the only thing more dangerous than a declared enemy is a false friend. Either way, you have a right to petition the President for redress of grievances. So, my friends, here's what I suggest. The President promised to, quote, "prosecute every crook we find who is cheating the people of this nation," unquote. And we, the people, have been cheated out of practically our entire monetary gold supply. 100 years ago, thousands of hard-working prospectors scraped together that gold, 1 or 2 hard ounces at a time. But a few manicured international bankers and their bureaucrats were able to mine all that gold out of Treasury depositories without even soiling their hands. The President also promised, quote, "We are going to follow every lead," unquote. If he means those words, then he should be eager to do what neither Senator Proxmire nor the Federal Reserve banks have been willing to do up to now. He should be anxious to follow the many leads which have already come to light over our stolen gold. My friends, we should bombard the White House with mailgrams, not letters, not postcards, but mailgrams. The more the better, from you, your friends, your neighbors, your relatives. It will cost you some money to send mailgrams, but the stakes are enormous. This is one of those moments when half measures or penny pinching will cost us dearly, very dearly. We must have impact. To send your mailgram, simply call Western Union and say that you want to send a mailgram to President Reagan. Then dictate your message. Here is a sample to get you started. Dear President Reagan, when you created your new Council on Integrity and Efficiency recently, you made some comments which I heartily applaud. You promised to follow every lead in rooting out those who are cheating the people of this nation. I would like to believe that you truly meant those words, and so would all my friends and neighbors. Therefore, I want to call your urgent attention to some very glaring leads which need to be followed. They point toward disastrous cheating of the American public by certain individuals in government. I am referring to the mounting evidence that large amounts of America's alleged gold stockpiles have been illegally disposed of. In a cassette tape commentary last month, Dr. Beter made public 2 Treasury documents which contradict each other. Both documents pertain to the London gold pool shipments of the 1960s, but there is a discrepancy of 165 million ounces between them. At current prices, that is over $80 billion, far more than the budget cuts you are now proposing. If any lead deserves to be followed, surely this one does. You can do that easily, Mr. President, since Dr. Beter's Washington office is located close to the White House. Dr. Beter has promised to keep his listeners informed of your response, and I will inform everyone else I know in turn. End of mailgram followed by your name and address. My friends, time is growing shorter and shorter. We must know who is for us, the people of America, and who is against us. Senator Proxmire has shown that he is not for us. The Presidents and Directors of the regional Federal Reserve Banks are gradually doing the same thing by not acting. So now it is the President's turn. Let us pray that his response will be different, but either way we will know. Now it's time to give you my last-minute summary. 2 days ago an attempt was made to cut short the new administration under the name of Ronald Reagan, but the attempt failed, giving us a reprieve from an immediate return to total Bolshevik control of the government. Even so, America is being shut down for war. A declaration of economic emergency is being planned for late this year that will include repudiation of the $100 bill. At the same time, the machinery of dictatorship is slowly taking shape all around us. And now plans are once again being laid, not only here but also in Russia, for a first strike in all-out nuclear war. My friends, there is only one way to stop all this. That is to expose those responsible before America is put to the sword. The sword of our Lord Jesus Christ is the truth, and if we will only use this weapon of the truth, we will find that it is more powerful than all the other weapons conceived by man. Until next month, God willing, this is Dr. Beter. Thank you, and may God bless each and every one of you.